The Guardian.
Hello, and welcome to the Charity Effectiveness Podcast, brought to you by Society Guardian in association with knowhownonprofit.org. I'm Jane Dudman, the editor of Public, The Guardian's website for senior public executives, and coming up in this month's programme.
We've got to have more impact. We've got to avoid any risk of duplication and waste. This doesn't necessarily mean that we have to merge our organisations into bigger structures.
How will public sector cutbacks affect infrastructure organisations and councils for voluntary service? We discuss the changes facing our umbrella organisations.
Sitting in separate offices in the same towns up and down the UK, there will be charity leaders who want to achieve exactly the same things as their counterparts.
Coalitions, collaborations and mergers. How to share your services and stay afloat. And who is keeping an eye on the public sector cuts? We assess the monitors watching the axe fall. It's true to say we are facing challenging and unprecedented times, both in terms of swingeing government cuts and the lasting impact of a lingering recession. So how are our umbrella organisations, our community and voluntary services, and the NCVOs, Akivos and NAVCAs of this world coping? What are they able to do to prop up and maintain the charities and groups they are there to support? Demand for help continues to grow as more people face unemployment and economic uncertainty, while the income of support organisations is falling. And yet, a recent report from Capacity Builders, looking at how changes to the economy have impacted on the voluntary and community sector, shows that despite all this, a large proportion say they are still coping well. So what's going to happen? Will the pressure simply get too much, or are we underestimating the creativity and resilience of the sector? Joining me in the studio to discuss the future for our infrastructure and support organisations are Peter Lewis, the Chief Executive of the London Voluntary Service Council, Vanna Gohill, the Director of Voice for Change England, which represents the interests of BME third sector groups, and joining us on the line from Liverpool, Alan Lewis, the Chief Executive of Liverpool Charity and Voluntary Services. Hello to you all.
Hello, Jane. Hello, Jane.
Before we get down to business, we're going to hear from Kevin Curley, the Chief Executive of NAVCA, on his vision and hopes for the future of support organisations around the country.
I think the biggest unmet need in the future will be development support. So a group of people identify a new need, they have an idea for how to meet it, and they need help to translate that idea into practice, because perhaps they have never leased a building before, they've never established a charitable structure before, they've never had to deal with the recruitment and vetting of volunteers to work with children or vulnerable elderly people before. And right now, across England, we've got a good level of development support for people who want to set up new organisations and new community groups. And I think we're going to see a real struggle in the future to maintain that network of support because of disinvestment by local authorities, especially. In terms of the national scene and the question, are there too many infrastructure organisations of the NAVCA type? It's an easy answer to say yes. And it's a lazy answer in a way to say that if there's less money, we need less organisations. What we've got to do is work more collaboratively together. We've got to have more impact. We've got to avoid any risk of duplication and waste. Those are the real challenges. This doesn't necessarily mean that we have to merge our organisations into bigger structures, but we've certainly got to make sure that we are not wasting any public money and any of our members' subscriptions that goes into our national organisations. And that's what NAVCA's committed to achieving over the next year or so as we downsize and we look at how we can develop new relationships with other national organisations. I think as we look at the cuts in public funding, I'm telling NAVCA's members, as the leaders of the local voluntary and community sector, that you've got to engage in serious dialogue about how those cuts are organised, about how priorities are defined. Over the last decade, in every local area, we've won a place at the table at the local strategic partnership table, at the table where the local priorities for services have been determined in the good times as the money has come in. Now that the times are harder and the money is in decline, we can't walk away and leave these difficult decisions about cuts to local politicians. We have to remain engaged, bringing the voice of the voluntary and community sector into those discussions. I would put it this way, you know, we've argued the case, and in most areas we've won the case for participative democracy. We can't now step away and just say, leave it to representative democracy, leave it to the local councillors to decide where where to make the cuts, because those decisions are too hard for us. So NAVCA is urging its members to fully engage in these difficult discussions so that the best possible decisions about priorities are reached in every local area.
Peter, Kevin was making the point there about the need to make more impact at this time. Now, you recently published a report called The Big Squeeze, The Recession, London and the voluntary and community groups that serve them. So what's London saying? Is the glass half empty or is it half full? What's the feeling?
I think the glass is very difficult at the moment in that Londoners are obviously suffering from a double whammy of the recession and public spending cuts already happening. And the voluntary and community sector is actually at the moment picking up that extra demand on its services, often with less resource in its pocket. So there is a double whammy facing the sector, but it is actually responding very flexibly. For example, our own HR support service, which offers expert HR support across London, has had a twofold increase in demand for its services, but we are managing to get through that through reallocating resources internally and getting people to work in a slightly different way. And that is the lesson that we're getting from across London, is that organisations are responding very flexibly to the changes that are happening.
And Alan, can I come to you on that? What about the North West? What are the big issues facing you there?
Well, I think they're similar across the country. Liverpool is the most deprived city in England, unfortunately, and the cuts from in-year cuts have hit Liverpool and Merseyside disproportionately. I've just had an email today saying that one local authority has suspended its entire small grants programme for small organisations. If you think most organisations are small, operating on sometimes 50,000 or less a year, then they're very dependent on small grants to make that difference. And although there are charitable trusts and so on they can apply to, then those trust income has also fallen. We're also a grant maker, and our trust, our investment income has fallen, so we can't make the same level of grants. And charitable giving has fallen too. So there's pressure from every point on voluntary action.
Thanks, Alan. Vanna, what do you say to Kevin's comments about ensuring that you and the organisations you support keep their place at the table to represent the BME community as the cuts take their toll and don't leave those difficult decisions to the politicians?
Well, I think it's very interesting when Kevin talks about that we have reached a place at the table. And I think the reality of the organisations within the black minority ethnic third sector is that very many of those groups aren't at those tables in the first place. So I think we have to look at evaluating who is it when we talk about the we. And I think what we within the BME third sector are feeling is that there is obviously the squeeze, and actually the squeeze has always been there in terms of our seat at the table and being at the sharp end of cuts and policy decisions. But at the same time, we also recognise that this is a really fundamental shift in terms of the economic recession, and that these are very uncharted territory for the BME third sector as we kind of understand our place within how we go forward. And so what we want to be able to do to work with NCVO, NAVCA, CVSs, other umbrella organisations who have had historically the lion's share of policies and resources that go with the implementation of that, is to make sure that we look at the principles of equality in terms of the way decisions are made, and to ensure that equality at this difficult time is to ensure that these cuts impact fairly on those that can take the cut in a way, but also that it doesn't disproportionately impact the very communities and the very organisations that are most in need. And that's when I think we need to evaluate the we, and the we in the big society needs to ensure that we're being inclusive as a society when we look at all these bigger, broader issues around policy and decision making.
Thank you. Well, Vanna was talking there about fairness, and we've been out and about talking to people from the sector about what they think of umbrella organisations and their work.
All the specific sort of umbrella bodies provide a very, very valuable role. For example, liaising with the government, if you like, over issues that affect us all, like gift aid, making sure that volunteers are well trained and supported and so on. There are a plethora of organisations, though, and sometimes, particularly for the smaller charities, I think it can be quite hard to navigate exactly who's responsible for what and who to go to for what support.
I think they all play a very key role. There's obviously some confusion as to what role they exactly play, I think, among a lot of people, particularly middle-ranking executives, but they all certainly have a part to play.
I think the only honest answer is that it's a very mixed picture. I think at local levels, councils of voluntary service are as good as the people who are working in them, and some of them are very, very patchy indeed.
There are too many umbrella organisations and too many of them that mix representative with standards roles, and I believe that, like with all other industries, there should be one umbrella body that represents the industry and one that seeks to control or control its standards, and the two should be at tension with each other rather than splitting off into lots of specific ones that seek to do both.
So, some questions there about the confusion, the possible confusion with too many infrastructure and local support organisations simply replicating each other's work. Alan, what's your view on that?
I've got many. We probably haven't got time in this. I think we have to focus on beneficiaries and what their needs are. And there are, wherever there is a particular niche, I mean, Vanda has been talking about the underrepresentation of BME groups. And that role of voice is very important. And we're talking about a sector that is not an adjunct of government. It is a vibrant marketplace. And the old model of a CVS in every area, for example, has long gone as competition has been introduced by funders. So on one hand, the funders are also party to this in wanting competition at a local level. I think if I may come just on Vanda's point around the cuts, it is vital that at the end of this, those that experience the inequalities don't end up more unequal as a result of the terrible times we're going to be going through.
Thank you. And if I can come to you, Peter, how do you think then in this situation infrastructure organisations can better demonstrate their worth and value to the sector?
Well, I think infrastructure organisations, I don't really like the word. I think I'm a support organisation. We do lots of different things. I think infrastructure turns people off. But I think you have to be very confident about what you do to achieve your objective. LVSC was set up 100 years ago to tackle poverty, to improve the health of Londoners. And we, you know, I can look you in the eye and I can tell you that we do that. And I challenge my staff every day to make sure that the training they're giving to individuals is helping other organisations deliver better, that the HR and business support we're doing is helping more effective delivery to Londoners on the ground. And I can show you how our policy and influence work has made things better for Londoners on the ground. Only last week I was at the London Skills and Employment Board on behalf of the sector. As Vanda said, you know, some of the people who have suffered the most from the recession and the public spending cuts are BME populations at the moment. The unemployment rate for BME communities in London is getting worse and worse compared to the London population. And it was me, unfortunately, having to make that case at the Skills and Employment Board. And it would have been far better in some circumstances to have Vanda there or the BME sector there voicing their own concerns. You know, I hope we'll get a task and finish group on it to look at that issue. But it's very important for every organisation, whether infrastructure or not, to be able to know that they can best meet the needs of the people that they are there to serve. And that's the crucial question for me. Competition is a bit of a diversion, I think. You know, if you look at the private sector, there's competition all over the place, and that's a good thing. You've got competition between their national infrastructure bodies of the CBI and the Chamber of Commerce, you know, fighting for their space. I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think organisations should work together when they can, if that's in the interests of the people they're there to serve and the causes they're there to serve.
And Van, this government is talking about its plan for a big society. What benefits do you think that's actually going to bring to the kind of support organisation for organisations?
I think in terms of a big society, for us, we're still trying to understand what that actually means. And we see it as a huge opportunity, I think, at a local level to make sure that the communities of interest that we're talking about have an opportunity to take part in what is being called a big society. And in doing that, I think we need to work with organisations that exist to help communities understand policies, to make sure that they are at those tables and can make sense of what is happening to them. So I would like to see this as an opportunity for specialist support provider organisations to work with the mainstream organisations, to work in collaboration. I don't think we can sit at different tables or at different spaces. I think we've all got to change how we've worked in the past and work together to review our strategies and work together to make sure we focus on what our values are as organisations, what are our strengths in terms of what are our specialisms that we have in terms of reach to our communities, and how do we make sure that we work together to make sure that in this new big society, where I think a lot of thinking and unpacking has got to happen and translating that into real policy, how do we work together to achieve that?
Vanna, thank you very much. And as Vanna says, the collaborative working is going to become increasingly important for many organisations in the sector. But how practical is it to strike up a successful partnership or coalition with a rival organisation? Well, RNIB, the Royal National Institute of Blind People, has come up with a new way of joint working, combining efforts with a whole host of partner organisations. We've been talking to RNIB's Chief Executive, Leslie Ann Alexander.
RNIB has been instrumental in drawing together all of the sometimes disparate and sometimes difficult partners in the sight loss field into a coalition called the UK Vision Strategy, where we work to three very, very clear aims. We want to prevent people from losing their sight. We want to make sure that visually impaired people get the treatment that they need and are properly supported. And we want to make sure that we have a coordinated effort to change the world so that it properly includes blind and partially sighted people. Because the visual impairment sector share the same ideals, it's been very easy for us to come up with some very specific projects where we've worked together. So the recent collaboration or association of RNIB and Action for Blind People is a typical example. Action for Blind People and RNIB both used to provide services to visually impaired people in England. It was ridiculous. We would fight for funds, we would fight for contract income, we would fight for blind people. And through the work of the UK Vision Strategy, we've been able to merge our efforts together so that visually impaired people now have a one-stop shop anywhere in England to receive the services that they need to be properly supported. On a structural basis, we've made some very brave and bold steps. RNIB transferred to Action for Blind People all of its work on the ground in England. So many millions of pounds worth of work was transferred to Action for Blind People on the 1st of April 2009. And it's meant that there's been a change of line management, we've had a change of branding on the front line. The staff on the front line are now branded Action for Blind People, part of the RNIB group. It's all a bit long, really. The real impact of our joint working is that visually impaired people have only got one place to go to receive the services that they need. And that has always been our goal. The prize has always been, how can we deliver more services for more people? It's an intriguing fact that sitting in separate offices in the same towns up and down the UK, there will be charity leaders who want to achieve exactly the same things as their counterparts. And for me, the way to tackle that is to pick up the phone, is to ring somebody up and say, hello, I think we want to do the same thing. Let's have a cup of tea, let's go for a beer, let's have a glass of wine, whatever you need to do, but make the first approach.
That was Leslie Ann Alexander, the Chief Executive of the RNIB. In our next programme, we're going to be looking at fundraising issues, and we want your help. We're looking for examples of innovative and off-the-wall ways of raising money. Are you using social media to bring in the funds? Or is crowdsourcing the way forward? Email us your suggestions to charityeffectiveness@guardian.co.uk. And who knows, we might even be speaking to you in the next edition of the podcast. We all know public services face the harshest cuts in decades. There will be high drama across the board. The ongoing story is how these decisions taken in Westminster will impact on local public services and the people who rely on them. Here at The Guardian, we've launched Cuts Watch, gathering information on public sector cuts from our readers. Patrick Butler is The Guardian's Head of Society, Health and Education, and he's with me in the studio. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Jane.
So what is the idea behind The Guardian's Cuts Watch?
What we want to tell is the big story of public services at the moment. Sometimes it feels like the only story, which is cuts, and these are going to affect charities and public services for weeks, months, years to come.
And I know that other organisations are looking at these cuts. Akivo, for example, is doing something similar. Are we best placed to do this particular work?
I think we're very well placed to do it. The Akivo and NCVO projects are fantastic and they complement what we do. What we want to do is to get our readers to tell us what's happening with the cuts to their schools and charities and local hospitals and social services.
And what should people do if they want to get involved?
They can go to our Cuts Watch page on societyguardian.co.uk or on educationguardian.co.uk, and there's an online form there that they can fill in where they can tell us all about the cuts, where they're happening, how it's affecting local services or affecting them and their families or their careers and their jobs.
Thank you very much, Patrick. I'd like to thank Peter Lewis, Vanna Gohill, Alan Lewis, Kevin Curley, Leslie Ann Alexander and Patrick Butler for their contributions to the programme. And thanks also to my producers at Sound Delivery. I'm Jane Dudman. You've been listening to the Charity Effectiveness podcast brought to you by Society Guardian and knowhownonprofit.org. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.